Hello, and thank you for tuning into the Stuff I Heard podcast. I'm your host, Joshua Peak. We are in December now, and we are getting ready for Christmas. I'm wearing one of my Christmas shirts. It's got Darth Vader and Boba Fett and a stormtrooper, and it says, "Boba, it's cold outside." It's kind of cute. Got a few of these shirts. They're adorable. I'll just face it. They're adorable, like me, obviously. So anyway, this is Stuff I Heard. Let me tell you about some stuff I heard this week, okay? There's a few things. I was watching college football yesterday, and there's a lot of contemplation about who's going to make it to the Final Four teams to play for the college national championship, and it's a lot of discussion about who belongs, who doesn't belong, why they belong, and I'm not going to get into that. All I'll say is I've watched some really good football this weekend. It's been fun to watch. So whoever your team is, whoever you're pulling for, I hope you make it. It's great. I'm going to watch all of it, no matter what. I am originally from Georgia and have been living in South Carolina for most of my life. I do have a sentimental part of my heart that pulls for Georgia once in a while, and also for South Carolina because it's, you know, tradition, right? There's no other reason for that, just tradition. Growing up, I didn't watch a lot of football. We mostly just worked. My mom's family, my grandfather owned a construction business. And when you weren't helping out with the family business, you were doing stuff around the house to make sure that everything else ran smoothly. My mom was a nurse and going back to college to get her further education. And I spent a lot of time with my grandparents. And my mom eventually got married, and we moved to South Carolina. And during that time, I became into contact with new cousins that were part of the family. And my new cousins really, really liked watching sports on TV. Well, that was sort of my introduction to a fandom, a reality of what you would like to watch on television as far as entertainment. Because to me, that's all that sports is. Any sport is just entertainment. I know, like, historically, sports were started off as a way of to compete, to show off the most viable, most athletic of a group of people, to represent their people. And over time, it has turned into sort of the similar thing where if you're from a certain area, you go, "Our guys won and your guys didn't, ha ha," you know, sort of a thing. But at the end of the day, it's all entertainment, right? It's all distractions. It's all, let me revel in this person's incredible ability and marvel with you at their talent. Because once in a while, you get next level talent playing against the other next level talent, and it's amazing to watch the dance. I call it the dance. They're going to compete. They're going to try really hard to defeat the other team. And through some miracle of grace and skill and work ethic and genetics and timing and luck and God, who knows what else, you get to watch excellence succeed and defeat their other person that's doing the same thing. So, watch some really great college football the last couple of days. But that leads into this. Okay, so hanging out with my new cousins, we started watching cable because cable was a thing. Cable was new when I was a kid. When I grew up, we had the old rabbit ears TV, and you'd stick some aluminum foil and other metal things to hopefully boost your signal, or you'd hold hands with each other across the room and stick something out the window to make it get a better signal in a certain direction to maybe get the channel saying, "Hold still, hold still. Oh, there it is." You know what I mean? But then cable came along, and cable allowed us to watch sports all over. And suddenly it became a show to watch football and basketball and things of that nature. And I got lucky. I got to see some really next level, once in a lifetime type of athletes. I remember Michael Jordan hitting the scene and becoming in college. He was already becoming that player that even if you didn't watch basketball, people were like crowding around televisions going, "You got to see this kid. He's incredible." And then he goes to the pros, and I mean, the rest is the history after that. But I mean, living here in South Carolina, We didn't have a lot of channel access, but one of the channels we could get was WGN out of Chicago. I don't know why, but Chicago seemed to have a really strong signal, pushing their signal down here. But I could watch WGN. It might be a little grainy on the rabbit ears, but then when cable came along, I was like, oh, now I can watch a lot of these games with this superstar athlete, and watch him soar through the air in ways that most humans can't. But with that also became football with next level talent. And we watched a lot of people get recruited by teams. I didn't get to watch this particular person, but in 1989, the Detroit Lions drafted Barry Sanders. Now, I had heard about Barry Sanders. This is about the time we had just moved to South Carolina, I think in 85, 86 time frame, somewhere in that range. And I just started to watch sports with my cousins, and cable was just becoming in our house regularly to where we could watch a little bit of everything. And I remember when the name Barry Sanders hit the pro level, because ESPN suddenly was highlighting this guy. And even if you couldn't get Detroit Lions to watch on your television, you wanted to watch ESPN highlights because Barry Sanders was a human highlight reel. Well, so recently, the reason I'm saying all this is because there is a documentary that's on Amazon Prime right now. It just came out in November. It's called Bye Bye Barry, and it's incredible. I mean, it is an homage to Barry Sanders. There's lots of celebrities in it that are talking about how they watched Barry Sanders come to light, how they were marveled by his talent, how they all found themselves with their jaw on the ground watching him do things that were so incredible. And yet every time he scored a touchdown, he would just selflessly walk up to the ref and hand him the ball. In a time where most of the people playing football would spike the football and do a dance and take too long and make it look ridiculous, Barry would just run, make you look like a fool on the field. Maybe all 10 or 11 guys would touch you and he could still score. And then he would just walk over to the ref and hand him the ball. And he'd go back into the sidelines and wait for the next play so he could play again. I always assumed that Barry was very shy because he didn't talk much. You didn't hear him interview a lot. That wasn't the case. He does this documentary and he says, no, my job was to play football. I was alive whenever I played football. And that was my whole thing, was I wanted to get the ball and I wanted to do what I do. That's why I was there. There's an actor that talks about this during the show, Jeff Daniels, one of my favorite actors. And he said, it's sort of like being an actor. From the moment that the director says, and go, to the moment he says, and cut. He said, I'm alive during that time. The rest of the time, I don't even know who I am. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know how to act. And I relate to that. There's a lot in life that I feel uncomfortable with. I have a hard time just relaxing. I have a hard time just finding peace where I can sit still. There's a lot in my brain that is built just to work. There's a lot in my body, the way I'm built, is just to work. And to have moments where I can reflect or spend time thinking about something is weirdly hard for me, but also kind of a treat. Because the more I do it, the more I'm learning about how to do it. Watching Barry Sanders reminded me of my admiration for people who had that kind of work ethic, who had that kind of drive. To me, watching him on the field was like watching someone who, like, all of the pro players are supposed to be at like a level 10, you know, as far as athletic ability. And Barry was like on a 20. I mean, and I kept wondering, watching him as a kid, I was like, is it that his brain is moving faster than everybody else, so he can see what their tendencies are and completely make them look like a fool and go the other way. And I mean, or was it that his work ethic was so strong that he was that capable physically of doing whatever he wanted anytime he wanted? And I think it was both. I really think it was both. I didn't know this, but you know, once I looked it up on Wikipedia, I just found out that he's only 6 years older than me. I always thought that he was like a grown man and I was a child, and he's only 6 years older. That's not that much older. But man, what a pleasure it was to watch him play. Just incredible. He was 5'8", about 200 pounds, just a little over 200 pounds when he played for most of his career. Just a bowling ball of a player. They say that he was one of the fastest, or he was the fastest to get to, was it 10,000 yards or something like that? Something ridiculous, some stat. Where was it? I was just looking at it not long ago. I made myself notes in my tabs. And I could, here we go. He left the game of football after 10 seasons. Said that he had gained 15,269 yards, the most ever by any player within a 10-year span. And he retired with only 1,457 rushing yards to beat Walter Payton's career rushing mark of 16,726. There was no doubt that he would have broken Walter Payton's record, but he talks about this in his documentary about how personal achievements weren't really his goal. He wanted to win a trophy. He wanted to win the Super Bowl. And for whatever reason, the Lions didn't want to win a Super Bowl because they kept trading away all of their top talent. And I'm sure it had to do with salary cap issues and stuff like that, because at a certain point there was a salary cap. But when you have that level of talent and you don't achieve the thing you want to achieve, it's perceived that you're just wasting your talent. And the Detroit Lions have historically done that. They did it with Calvin Johnson. They did it with Rodney Peete. Rodney Peete and Barry Sanders were both up for a Heisman the same year that Barry won the Heisman. That's the caliber of players that they had on their team. They had these linemen that ended up becoming like Hall of Fame offensive linemen. They had great talent on that team. And they, at a certain point, they just go, eh, and they squandered it away. Way to go, Detroit. But listen, on another note, it was a pleasure to check out of my life once in a while and not think about anything other than watching Barry Sanders do the unimagined on the field. To watch him like a person would normally play a video game and have a video game character make people look like fools. He did that to people on the field. Top level talent. And this documentary is great. You get to hear in his words why he walked away from the game of football and how he has no regrets. And listen, I'm happy for him. I'm happy he got out before he got injured. I'm happy he didn't just keep toeing the line for a team that really wasn't trying to support him at the end. It doesn't tarnish my opinion of him. I'm sure it doesn't tarnish a lot of people's opinion of him. Even Emmitt Smith, who ended up eventually breaking Walter Payton's record and now has the record for most rushing yards, even Emmitt said, in my eyes, he will always be the greatest running back in history. I mean, how can you deny it when you watch him? And if you watched him live, oh man, it was impressive. But anyway, check out this documentary. It's really great. They did a great job of it. It's not very long. It's like an hour and a half on Amazon Prime. It's called Bye Bye Barry. And you'll get to see the Barry Sanders story. All right, switch gears a little bit. on Netflix, there's a cartoon movie. I know you're like, cartoon movie? I don't watch cartoon movies. It's cute. There's a cartoon movie called Leo, L-E-O, and it's got Adam Sandler playing this lizard. He's a classroom pet. And Bill Burr is the turtle in the little aquarium cage. Here's the rundown that Google gives. It says, Leo the lizard has been stuck in the same Florida classroom for decades. When he learns he only has 1 year left to live, he plans to escape to freedom, but instead has to rescue his class from their nearby, from their horrible, mean substitute teacher. My eyes just darted all over the place like it was trying to find a word. Anyway, so it's adorable. I did not expect them to sing. It's not necessarily a musical, but there's moments where they sing a song. But if you listen to the lyrics, it's not your typical song singing movie. It's almost like they're making up the words as they go along. It's adorable. It's adorable. It's such an adorable little movie. I liked it. The characters are cute. They're relatable. It's a classroom full of kids who are trying to figure out their own life and trying to figure out who they are and trying to figure out this new substitute teacher. And everybody's just doing their best. I mean, that's basically the whole plot of this. Everybody's doing their best, and that's all you can do. I like Leo. I think it's great. I think it's a fun for the whole family. There's stuff in there for adults that they're going to laugh at. The kids don't understand, but they're still going to laugh at it. There's a lot of parts in there just for kids. It's adorable. I like it. I think it's a winner. I think Adam Sandler's making better and better movies the older he gets. So go check it out. It's really great. All right. So then hang on. I gotta have a sip of coffee because I can feel stuff moving around in my nose and my throat. I know you're like, oh, that's gross. Yeah, we are gross. How about that? So anyway, this one particular show on Netflix kept popping up as, you should watch this. I guess it learns the algorithm of things that you like. And it kept saying, you'll like this, you'll like this, you'll like this. And I was like, and the stupid promo thing would play. And I was like, I don't know. I don't think it's for me. But I finally watched it. I finally just hit play and I said, all right, we'll see what all the fuss is about. I'll just turn it on. I'll turn it on. It's kind of like having a little sister or a little brother go, you know, hey, I got something to show you. Hey, I got something to show you. Hey, look, look, hey, look, look. You're like, what? Oh, okay. It's kind of like that. So there's this show on Netflix and it's advertised. The name of it is All the Light We Cannot See. So when I read the title, my first thought was, oh, it's going to be about space or something, or they're going to be in a cave or something. I was like, what? All the light you cannot see. I was like, the idea of light is photons, and photons gives you light so that you can see the light. I'm like, well, what are you talking about? All the light you cannot see. That doesn't make any sense. And then the preview starts and there's Mark Ruffalo on the screen. And I'm like, look, it's the Hulk. And he's trying to do an accent. And I was like, oh, that's a terrible accent. What are you doing? And then there's Hugh Laurie. And Hugh Laurie is, obviously, he's Hugh Laurie. So I was like, okay, we got Ruffalo and Laurie. Okay. I like Laurie. I've never seen anything bad that Hugh Laurie's done. I didn't even watch House, okay? So, and I've heard people rave about House. But every movie or television show that I've seen Hugh Laurie in since then has been super. I've been really impressed with his acting ability. And watching him in just the promo was enough to draw me in to watch this. Plus, they had this kid in the beginning that they highlighted on the picture, a young fella. He looked really familiar, and I was like, I know that guy from something. I've seen him in something. At first, I thought it was the kid from Zathura, but it's not him. It ended up being the main character from the German sci-fi show that I watched that I raved about called Dark. If you haven't watched Dark, man, that is something else. That is incredible. His name is Lewis Hoffman. I had to look him up because I was like, this can't be the same kid. It's the same guy. He's not a kid anymore. He's an adult. But yeah, so here's the rundown. Here's what the show is about. And it's small. It doesn't say much, but this is the blurb that they put on Google. A blind French girl and a young German soldier's path cross during World War II. Apparently, this was made into a book that won some kind of Pulitzer Prize. I was like, what? All right. A book won a Pulitzer Prize for this story. All right, great. I didn't even know that. I just started watching it. I typed in the thing, is this based on a true story? And it says, no, the book is historical fiction set in World War II. However, the 1944 siege and battle for the control of Saint-Malo is very real. Okay, that's cool. So then the next question that pops up underneath it, because that's how algorithms work, is they go, what else does people type in? Is the actress in All the Light We Cannot See blind? And it says that both of the actresses who played this particular girl, Marie Laurie, in Two Stages of Life, are both blind. Yes, they are blind characters, blind actresses. But it's basically about the story of hope and resistance during World War II when the Nazis occupied Saint-Malo. And it's about the French religion, the French resistance. God, my tongue is all tied this morning. Can Mark Ruffalo do a French accent as a person speaking English? Does it matter? Not really. Everybody else speaks their language, like where they're from, perfectly. So, and it's English. Even the young fellow, Luis Hoffman, he's supposed to be a German soldier and he's learned to speak English, obviously. And he does a Germanish version of English and it's fine. It's fine. You know, I don't need them to speak their native German. I like the fact that I can listen to them and not have to read the subtitles like I did watching Dark. the show was fine. The show was great. The show was great. The show is about hope and resistance. The show is about basically this guy has a daughter who's blind. And there's this certain diamond thing that has a curse on it that if you touch it, it's supposed to make you immortal and it's supposed to make those around you suffer. And turns out Mark Ruffalo is that guy. And he touched this thing. He works for some kind of museum and far in charge of their antiquities department. And he loves his daughter and he's trying to raise his daughter to be self-sufficient. You don't see her mother anywhere in this, but you see him and her together and he's teaching her all the time. And I like the relationship stuff between the two of them. It's so endearing and lovely. And Hugh Laurie plays his uncle and Uncle Etienne. And I like his character. I like Hugh Laurie. I like all the people in this. I even like the bad guy. This awful German soldier that's coming after them. I mean, he embodies the bad guy persona. And I've always said that, you know, you need a good antithesis. You need a good foe to make a story. I mean, it gives you the ability to see the arc of the characters and see them overcoming obstacles and that sort of thing. Everybody has a purpose. Everybody's fighting to achieve something. And everybody's great in this. Everybody's really great in this. I realized that watching it, there is light in things that you can't see. The blind girl, she can see when people are good because she can hear it in their voice, even if they may be the enemy. She can tell where things are by sound. She can see the hope in people. Just like we all can. we all have the ability to look at one another or talk to one another, and we have a feeling, an internal feeling, that we know, hey, if I stick with this person, I think everything's going to be okay. There are times in our life that are very hard, very tough to get through. But if we have hope, that is the light that you can't see. And that's basically what this is. This is, as a story, this is poetry as a story. This is poetry of hope and resistance as a story, in looking at how hard life can be and how cruel and how determined life can be towards everyone involved, including the people who are supposed to be the quote unquote bad guys. There's still that hope and that resistance, and it's in all of us. I don't know. I was raised to have an understanding of empathy. I was raised to look at things from different points of view. I don't know exactly where it started or how it molded or whatever, but I'm always trying to put myself in someone else's shoes and think to myself, why did you make that decision? What made you decide to do this thing? What got you to the point that you said those things in that order to have me have a feeling about this thing? And I'm always amazed at people's ability to turn it into a, yeah, I thought I was doing the right thing. That seems to be the common thread. We all think we're doing the right thing. And this show is beautiful. It's only 4 episodes. It's hard. There's parts of it that are difficult to watch because you realize that, you know, for whatever reason, having a television show about Nazis, it seems to be a common thread that is happening. But also, it's kind of happening in a time where there appears to be a lot of visceral dislike for people of Jewish faith, which is mind-boggling to me. And in 2023, this is still happening. I mean, come on, grow up, people. Jesus. I've known and loved people from different races and backgrounds and faiths, and everybody is just trying their best. Of all the people that I've met, maybe it's just because, I don't know, like-minded people meet like-minded people. Maybe I've just met kind people. Maybe I've just been interacted with people who are trying to make the best of their life, whatever tools they're given. Maybe it's just fate. Maybe God had a plan for me to come into contact with some of the best versions of people, and sometimes the worst, but mostly the best. I don't know. Takes a lot of energy to hate. Takes a lot of energy to love too. Neither one is lazy. Something to think about. Anyway, I really liked it. All the Light We Cannot See. Check it out on Netflix. Hugh Laurie is a star. And then podcast-wise, I did get to listen to a podcast this week. I'm a huge Whitney Cummings fan. I'm also a huge Bert Kreischer fan and a Leanne Kreischer fan. You guys already know that. But Bert's wife, Leanne, has a podcast called Wife of the Party. And she just hit episode 300 recently. And Whitney Cummings is expecting a baby, and she's a friend of theirs. And she came on and did the podcast for about 2.5 hours. And I loved it. I loved everything about it. It's amazing to see people grow. It's amazing to see people achieve the things they want. It's also a little heartbreaking to see sort of the hardships that some people go through, and things just don't seem to work out their way. But I love this conversation that they have. And Bert stops in and talks to them a little bit too. Yeah, I'm proud of Leanne. I'm proud of Bert. I'm proud of all of them. I'm proud of Whitney. You know, everybody deserves to be happy. Everybody needs to find that in their life at some point. And I'm glad they're all finding it. I'm glad I was a fan along the way. Makes me feel good. So anyway, who's your people? Who do you root for? Who do you want to succeed? Who do you revel in whenever they do achieve the thing? Do you have a certain sports figure that you're like, oh man, it's so fun to watch them play, and I can't believe they finally got to achieve their goal, and blah, blah, blah. I mean, is it an actor? Is it a television show? Is it a character? What is it? What do you get excited about? I've said before how my fandom for Star Wars all has to do with the idea of hope and resistance. And of course, Netflix was like, well, let's boil down that algorithm. Oh, look, you'll like this show. You got me. You're right. I liked it. So, hope and resistance. Yeah. Thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks for being a part of this. I'm going to wrap this up. Please remember to rate, review, and subscribe. Share this with your friends. If you want to be on the podcast, talk about anything, let me know. Drop me a line. Shoot me a shot. Tag me and stuff. And I'll go from there. And we'll hang out, or we'll talk, or we'll do whatever. Until next time, I always end this by saying, cue the cow.
Cue the cow. Move, baby.